Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
All right, welcome back. It's Dave Flyer here on 720 WGN. It is music's biggest night, the Grammys. It airs Sunday at 7 on CBS. It's a full night of competition, but more importantly, great music and live entertainment. As tradition holds, joining us tonight to highlight the nominees, the top choices for tonight's awards, and the esteemed list of performers is Anthony DeCurtis, author and contributing editor of Rolling Stone magazine. Anthony, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. It's a pleasure to be back.
I love talking to you about all this stuff. You are the big expert on all this, and you teach me a lot every time we talk. So thank you for
That's so kind.
Thanks for hanging out. You know, the big four categories, of course, are Record of the Year, Song of the Year, Album of the Year, Best New Artist. First, you know, I think this is confusing to some people, but what's the difference between album and record of the year? Because I think it's just, it seems like it's the same thing.
Well, record of the year is a category, it goes to a song, and it goes to the producer and the artist. I mean, these categories are a little confusing. They're kind of industry categories. Song of the year goes to the songwriter, and then album of the year is just the album of the year. So I don't know if that, I mean, the real confusion seems to me to be between Record of the Year and Song of the Year. They both address individual songs. One is more about the production of the song. The other is about the songwriting. Song is about songwriting. Record is about production.
Gotcha. Yeah, because you know the word record, you can go 50 yes. different ways with the word record, and there might be a generation that doesn't quite get record, and I know that now that vinyl sales are really kicking butt and are just prominent. You can buy vinyl in stores and, of course, on Amazon and so forth. Then they think about the physical record, right?
Yes, exactly. And you know, it's really interesting because I mean, as a term, it is kind of passe, but you know, musicians use it all the time when you talk. I mean, I'm working on a new record, and
cool.
I don't know that we've come up with a. I don't know that we've come up with a term that really suits whatever it is that people do these days when they record music.
Sure. Yeah, makes sense. Song of the Year is the first one here. Now, I'm familiar with most of these artists. I got to see Billie Eilish in concert with my 14-year-old daughter last summer.
Nice.
I will tell you, I warmed up to it pretty quickly. I was like, what have I gotten myself into? Because there's just screaming teenage girls everywhere.
Sure.
But I like her music. I like her style. I heard an interview with her, I don't know, a couple months ago. And kind of just a really unique individual and making some really interesting music.
Yeah, she's terrific, actually. And, you know, she's got a bunch of nominations. She got 6 nominations, including Song of the Year for a track called Bad Guy, which I'm assuming that most people have heard. You know, there's 8 nominations in this category. Well, there's Truth Hurts by Lizzo, Someone You Loved by Louis Capaldi, Norman Rockwell, a title that includes an expletive, Norman Effing Rockwell, by Lana Del Rey, Lover by Taylor Swift, Hard Place by Her, Bring My Flowers Now by Tanya Tucker, Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, and Always Remember Us This Way by Lady Gaga. Now, this song would go to the artist and the songwriter. And I have to say, I think all of these major categories are really strong this year. I think this category is a battle between Truth Hurts by Lizzo, Lover by Taylor Swift, and Bad Guy by Billie Eilish. And as Song of the Year, I think it's going to go to Lizzo for Truth Hurts. I think that song, I don't know, there's not a woman I've met or know who can't recite every single lyric to that song. Lizzo is so positive, and you know, people really have responded to her. I think she's going to have a big night. You know, she got 8 nominations. She leads, everyone
wow.
this year in nominations.
Yeah.
She got nominated in all four of the big categories. So,
yeah,
you know,
she's
I
new.
Think she's
yeah.
going to have a good night.
Yeah, she's
yeah,
new.
I think she's going to take this one. Now, song of the year.
Now, do you think, you know, people always talk about who should win, who will win. You think it's both Lizzo on this one?
I mean, I don't think anybody's going to fight about Lizzo getting this.
Okay.
You know, people will have their favorites.
Sure.
You know, I think Billie Eilish, I think she's, you know, again, as I mentioned, you know, she's got six nominations. You know, I don't want to tip my hand here, but I sort of see her maybe carrying the best new artist category.
Okay.
But yeah. I don't think she's going to get it for a bad guy here.
Gotcha. Record of the year. Some of the same players, some different ones as well. Ariana Grande's in this, Khalid's in this, Billie Eilish, of course. Let's talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. Okay, once again, for record of the year, we have Hey Ma by Bon Iver, Bad Guy by Billie Eilish, Seven Rings by Ariana Grande, Hard Place by her, Talk by Khalid, Old Town Road by Lil Nas X and Billy Ray Cyrus.
Yeah, interesting.
Truth Hurts by Lizzo and Sunflower by Post Malone and Swae Lee. I think Old Town Road is going to take this.
I was just going to, that was my, I like to get you on that first because you're the expert, but that's what my thought was because it's such a unique combination.
Completely. Again, it's also something that people ended up feeling really good about it. You know, there was a big battle of, you know, would country music radio play it? And then Billy Ray Cyrus hopped on board and suddenly, you know, it's a nice big comeback right. for him. It's a, you know, a great sort of smash by Lil Nas X. It's a song that yeah, everybody seems to like. So I think it will carry record of the year.
How about album of the year?
All right, well, this is a big one, and again, there's just a ton of, you know, again, there's eight nominees. I think it's a very strong category. The nominees are I by Bon Iver, Norman Rockwell by Lana Del Rey, When We Fall Asleep, Where Do We Go by Billie Eilish, mm-hmm. Thank You, Next by Ariana Grande, I Used to Know Her by her, Seven by Lil Nas X, Because I Love You by Lizzo, and Father of the Bride by Vampire Weekend. Now, honestly, I mean, I think every single record here is a strong contender.
Sure.
Again, I think Lizzo's going to get this. But I would say, you know, I think Lana Del Rey is strong here. I think Billie Eilish is strong here. Wouldn't be shocked if either of them win, but
okay.
You know, I think Lizzo again is gonna carry this category.
Best new artist. That's where you say that Billie Eilish might pull out.
Yes, I think you know. I think her youth is actually going to help her here. You know, even though Lizzo, really made her impact last year,
mm-hmm.
you know, she's been around for a little bit. Whereas I think, you know, Billie Eilish was 17 when, you know, she came on the scene. And sometimes that hurts in the more quote-unquote serious categories. You know, do you want to give a 17-year-old song of the year? You know, do you want to give a 17-year-old, you know, record of the year? But I think for best new artist, you know, I think she made a very big impact. And, you know, with the Grammys historically having a problem with women, I think... Yeah, that helps
yeah.
Billie Eilish and Lizzo this year. I think people are looking to them. And I think, again, they're battling it out in this category. But I think Billie Eilish will win for Best New Artist.
We'll talk a little bit about those controversies. But you talk about, you know, the issue with women and nominating and winning and so forth. You know, you obviously want to make sure it's balanced. But you also want the best person to win
right.
based on their talent. And because of the culture today, it does become a little bit of a fine line, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, people are pretty whipped up. Like, I mean, I don't think this is a shock to any of your listeners. I mean, just, you know, whatever's going on politically, I think sets a tone for what's happening in the country. And people, you know, are kind of in a fighting mood. And, you know, if they feel like they're getting shortchanged or they're not getting recognized, they're not getting... appreciated. Nobody's interested in not speaking out these days. So that, you know, with something like the Grammys, I mean, I think you really, I mean, all the award shows really, but you know, the Grammys have struggled with this, and there's been a lot going on. Just, you know, the woman who was brought in to replace the previous person who was, you know, in charge of the National Academy of Recording Arts and Sciences, which, you know, oversees the Grammys, you know, she came in because of remarks that Neil Portnoy, the previous head, had made about women. And then she just got fired, you know, just
it's crazy. Yeah.
Like 2 weeks ago. And there's charges flying around. I mean, she was charged with creating, you know, an inhospitable workplace. She, in turn, has charged that she was sexually harassed. And, you know, all of this is really hanging like a cloud over the Grammys. I mean, I don't know how much general, I mean, it's been widely covered, but I don't know how much, you know, general audiences are, you know, if this is really what's on their mind. But for everybody sitting in that room, you know, watching this show in Los Angeles, man, you know that they're all thinking about it.
Well, yeah, you're absolutely right. So, I mean, there's been, you know, the environment is toxic and intolerable. It's abusive and bullying. There's voting irregularities, financial mismanagement. I've actually heard even deeper stories than what you just mentioned as well. But I think that, you know, you're absolutely right. The general public, I think, like my kids look forward to watching the Grammys because they're getting a free concert for 3 hours. You know, they might not be as concerned. I spent, you know, 12 years of my life in the music industry, so I still follow this pretty intently. And it's just, it's a shame because, you know, it's taken away from the artist a little bit.
Oh, completely. Like, you know, the people, you know, many of them, you know, you work your whole life to get this kind of recognition, you know, and, you know, to have people not talking about, you know, the quality of your album or the quality of your song or even the quality of your performance, but about, you know, what the person who ran the Grammys did or the other person who replaced that person, whatever she did, and, you know, whatever behind-the-scenes shenanigans are going on in terms of even, you know, the nominees. I mean, that's one of the charges that's flying around that, right. You know, that while, you know, on the one hand, you know, it's a pretty straight-up process, you know, that around the edges there's some, there's some manipulation of, you know, who the nominees are going to be. And, you know, that's really a shame.
We are talking to Anthony DeCurtis for Rolling Stone magazine on the 2020 Grammys. And there's more after the top stories next on 720 WGN.
I put the sting in single. Ain't worry about a ring on my finger. So you can tell your friend. Shoot your shot when you see him. It's okay. He already in my DM.
Why am I? State player on 720 WGN. We're talking to Anthony DeCurtis from Rolling Stone magazine, previewing 62nd annual Grammy Awards. I know, you know, we're talking a little bit about the big four categories, and because the Golden Globes just happened, Screen Actors Guild, we got the Oscars coming up. I was just looking at the best compilation soundtrack. It's The Lion King. It's Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. It's Rocket Man's Spider-Man, A Star is Born. I think that's what surprised me a little bit because in my mind, and you got to think about, I guess, what is considered the Grammy year, A Star is Born being in there, I thought that was already last year's conversation.
Well, I know. The cutoff on these things is tricky. You know, it really, it goes from something like October 1st to September 30th. And, you know, I think this affects even something like, you know, Lil Nas X. I mean, it seems like that song has been a phenomenon.
Right.
You know,
forever.
Yeah. You know, exactly. Yeah. You know, the timing on it for the Grammys, you know, the people who are voting, you know, maybe it's kind of a little played out for them. I mean, it might not be as big a night for him as, you know, it would be if this was held 6 months ago. But we shall see. But, yeah, that kind of thing where, you know, kind of Lady Gaga and A Star is Born, which was tremendous, everybody mm-hmm. loved it. It mm-hmm. sort of seemed like, you know, well, literally, we've seen this movie before.
But, you know, who's the winner here? I mean, I that was an outstanding album. A lot of it is compilation, various artists.
Yeah.
You know, where do you see that?
You know what I would, I personally would like to see, you know, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, because I like, I mean, you know, Tarantino's kind of a wild guy, but I love his music taste.
Right.
And I feel like he uses music in movies in really intriguing ways. You know, it's more than just, oh, this is the year.
Right.
It's like he captures something about, I think, the emotionality. So that's what I'd like to see happen. I don't know that that's what will happen.
Gotcha. And in all these categories, any snubs, anything that you said, like, you know, they really should have. Like Taylor Swift, I think, was pretty low-key, I guess, this year, as far as that's concerned. And Star is Born, as we talked about that, too. You know, Shallow was such a big deal. Like, you know, you see anything that's glaring to you?
Nothing really kind of, like, you know, kind of shocked me, to be honest with you. And, you know, I wanted to go back to, you know, something you had said just a little bit earlier. You know, this idea of what the show is. You know, you have a situation here. The host is Alicia Keys. You know, you have presenters like, you know, Stevie Wonder, Smokey Robinson, Shania Twain.
Yeah.
You know, performers, you know, Billie Eilish will be performing. You know, Lizzo will be performing. Aerosmith is going to be doing like a 50th anniversary performance. You know, Run DMC is going to be in there. You know, her, Jonas Brothers, you know, Blake Shelton, Gwen Stefani.
Demi Lovato.
Ariana Grande, who refused to perform last year because of, you know, she claimed that, you know, they wouldn't let her do the song she wanted to do, but she's back. You know, I mean, as a, you know, as a musical show, you know, that's quite a range.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh yeah.
I think, yeah, the Grammys have gotten stronger. I mean, I think, you know, they're very alert to social media, and these performances individually are almost like, you know, if you decide, you know, you don't want to stay up for the 3 hours to watch the Grammys, you know, when you get up the next morning and you look at those individual performances, you know, in a lot of instances, you'll be blown away.
And, you know, you talk about the 50th anniversary of Aerosmith. You know, there's a lawsuit or something going on now between the longtime drummer of the band and Aerosmith itself.
I know, and that's really sad. I mean, considering that this is a 50th anniversary celebration of the band, and he was the original drummer, you know, the band is claiming that, I mean, they've replaced him because of an injury and that he's not performing at the level that he should be performing at. He's claiming that that's not the case, you know, and so, you know, again, there's kind of a, you know, a bit of a cloud, you know, hanging over, you know, this Aerosmith appearance because, you know, that lawsuit's gotten a lot of attention.
It's kind of crazy. And then you got the Super Bowl coming up, and, you know, that's another big piece of entertainment. For even if you're not a football fan, you're watching that too. So you got Demi Lovato's doing the national anthem, no pressure there.
Exactly.
But you got one hell of a halftime show again coming up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Shakira and J-Lo, you know, that'll work.
Yeah, I think so.
No, I think that'll be an exciting show. I know it's not going to be one of the ones, I think, that, you know, or what kind of statement are they going to make. I think that they're just going to rock that place, you know, and it's going to be, you know, a real fun, exciting, upbeat, you know, really strong performance.
Now, you were talking about Alicia Keys hosting, returning as host, actually, and I wasn't sure going into it last year, because, you know, Ellen DeGeneres has hosted. I mean, comedians have hosted this thing. I was not quite sure where it was going to go. I really enjoyed it. I really enjoyed, like, one of their own, you know, musical talents up there hosting and introducing everybody.
No, someone who's got a lot of presence, you know, a lot of dignity. She's very beautiful. She's a very accomplished artist. And, you know, she just took the reins. You know, there was nothing particularly showy about it, but she just, you know, held the show together, you know, and I think that's what the host is there for, you know, because, you know, I think with the Grammys, you know, you've got the country artist, and then you've got a rap artist, and you've got a rock and roll artist, and you've got a classical thing. All this stuff is going on, and I think the through line is provided by the host, and Alicia Keys just did a beautiful job last year. And,
she did.
You know, I assume, you know, she'll deliver again.
I think so, too. You can catch Anthony DeCurtis, of course, in Rolling Stone magazine. And again, the Grammys are on Sunday night at 7 on CBS. Always a pleasure getting your insight. We should do a post show and see how we did.
We Perhaps we should.
Thanks, Anthony.
I'm always counting on people forgetting my last year's predictions.
Okay. I should go back and look at that.
Yeah. I'll be there, man.
Okay, sounds good. All right. Have a good one, Anthony.
Take care, brother.
All
good talking to you.
We'll be right back. It's 720 WGN.
Now, live from the Skyline Studios, here's Dave Plyer.
Hey, everybody. Happy Friday to all of you. Glad you could join us on this rainy, soon-to-be snowy Friday night, live from the Skyline Studios, 312-981-7200. You can call, you can text, do whatever you want anytime throughout the show. Now, we've got a nice little show lined up for you tonight, a little more focused on the music industry since Monday or Sunday is the 62nd annual Grammy Award. So the first Grammys, I was just doing a little research. Curtis, good evening to you.
Good evening.
Producer at large. The first ever Grammy Awards was in 1958, celebrated 1957. So you would kind of think that 1957, such a big year for rock and roll, really an introductory year of rock and roll, there'd be some rock artists in there. There was not. So many of the music's elite at the time that were still considered elite was Frank Sinatra, Sammy Davis, Dean Martin, Gene Autry, Johnny Mercer, Henry Mancini, Andre Previn. They all gathered for a black tie dinner and awards presentation in the grand ballroom of the Beverly Hotel in 1958. At the same time, other new Academy members were gathering at a function held simultaneously in New York City. It was not televised at that time, but there were literally two different award shows going on. Now, speaking of Sinatra, by the way, that first year, Sinatra won, this is what he won, Best Album Cover. Not for the music, but it was for the Best Album Cover. And that's a lost art right there, right? I mean, the album cover. I mean, I remember as a kid just going through the record store and just kind of thumbing through the records and just looking at the artwork on these things. It's just, again, lost art. But his best cover was for his album Only the Lonely. The second thing about this, this is really interesting. The Sinatra Hours airs Sunday mornings starting at 6:30, only here on WGN Radio. So please tune in for that. Henry Mancini won Album of the Year that year, that first Grammy Awards, for his Peter Gunn album. It was a soundtrack to Peter Gunn, which was a TV series. At the time, Ella Fitzgerald, Perry Como, Count Basie also won. There was, of course, no rock category. I fast forward a little bit to the 20th anniversary. It saw the Eagles win Record of the Year for Hotel California. Album of the Year was Fleetwood Mac for Rumors, just to put this in perspective. Song went to You Light Up My Life. Do you know who did that song?
I
Curtis,
do not.
You're an old soul. All right. Debbie Boone. She also won Best New Artist. 25th Grammys went to Toto, Willie Nelson, and Men at Work. So there's your 80s version of that. And then the 50th Grammys, you know, we're in the 62nd, went to Amy Winehouse. Like, she totally, like, I think captured every single category practically. Herbie Hancock won some stuff. The White Stripes also won as well. So tonight, we're going to talk about the best-selling albums of all time and the best-selling artists of all time. It is a very different list. And we'll ask that question to you. What was the first album you ever bought? First album you ever bought? 312-981-7200. We'll take some calls. We'll check out your texts. What was the first album that you were like psyched about that you brought home and threw on the record player? 312-981-7200. And with that, we're going to talk to Anthony DeCurtis from Rolling Stone magazine. You know, he joins us every year for his annual predictions of who will win the top Grammy prizes. Plus, we'll educate you on some of the nominees as well, because this is something that's not as as familiar to me as well. I know some of the artists, but some of them are a little more obscure to me. But it is all about the performances, right? I mean, you're watching this. Yeah, you know, it's not like watching the Screen Actors Guild and the Golden Globes, although the Golden Globes is most fun, I think, to watch. just as far as comedy and all that and seeing your favorite stars. But this is a 3-hour concert for the most part.
And it's a mashup of all the most popular artists right now.
It is.
Compared to like...
But mashup as in they're performing together as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but compared to like if you were to go to a concert at Wrigley, oh, you might see like, you know, like for example, the Green Day and Fall Out Boy and, you know, like those and Weezer, like those three artists
and
all together.
Dead.
Yeah. In one whole spot where you know what you're going to get, whereas these are the top people right now all on one stage collectively performing at one time.
Yeah. And my kids are 18, 14, and 7. So the 7-year-old doesn't care as much, but the other two, they wouldn't even know the Grammys run unless I told it to them. But they get pumped cuz they know it's a 3-hour concert. So that'll be fun. We'll talk about that. Later, actor Jerry O'Connell, you saw him first most likely in the movie Stand By Me. Classic coming-of-age film. He's got a show on WGN America called Carter. It's in its second season. It's actually a very funny show. Like, very, very funny show. I'm not even quite sure what to compare it to. You know, when I grew up, you know, the big private eye investigator show was that I loved was Rockford. It was always a little funny, just the kind of the situations he got himself into. It was a little investigative. He had a cool car. This is a great show. It's called Carter. We'll talk about that. And then Dave Schwann will join us for our history segment a little bit later. So we'll take your calls. We'll take your texts. I see a bunch of texts already coming in. What was the first album you ever bought? 312-981-7200. And we'll do that next on 720 WGN. Dave Plyer back with you on 720 WGN. This Eagles album was the number one best-selling album of all time. We're going to get to that. Best-selling artists, best-selling albums of all time. What was your favorite, your first album you ever bought? 312-981-7200. Frank from Lombard, you're on the air. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing great. You made me feel a little old, but you also made me smile when I was thinking about this one.
Awesome, awesome. What was the first album, man?
That was Meet the Beatles.
Ah, what year was that album?
I believe that was 1964. I barely had enough money to buy an album.
Yeah, right?
Then.
Yeah, you had to scrounge up to pay that money for that album. Do you still have it?
You know, I can't find it. I know I put it away, but, you know, that's what happens when it's well over 50 years old.
Yeah, but a first pressing of a Beatles album, that could be a little worth something, too, although it's worth something to you.
Oh, yeah, you know what? I would keep it around just for the sentimental values.
Yeah?
Because, truthfully, and I will say real quick, you tell me when it's time to get off, because I know I talk too much, but there were three great bands that came over from that British invasion, and people don't hardly ever think about the Dave Clark Five.
Oh, yeah.
The Kinks.
Yeah.
And yes, that other crazy group that came, those Bad Boys, the Rolling Stones.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. All three great ones coming from that time. Frank, thanks so much for the call and have a good night, buddy. Let's see here. We got a text from 773. Let's get to that one first. First album, George Michael Faith, full of number one hits. Yep, absolutely. Okay. Let's see here. I can't read that one. I don't even know what. Okay. First album I ever bought was a cassette of Metallica's Black Album. I have to say I really miss the music store experience. Oh, man, so do I. So that I spent 12 years of my life working for Musicland, Sam Goody, Coconuts, Peaches, here in Chicago, a little bit in Minneapolis. I spent some time in New York. And that was the greatest experience. I mean, just, you know, first of all, just working in the space and hearing all this great music, meeting all these great musicians over the years, the concerts. But I love that. The whole thing was, I mean, you would take a Friday night, go grab something with some buddies and go to the music store and just go sit and go through the albums and just go through the racks and see what was new and go through the dump bins and find all the old stuff that was for, you know, there was dump bins of 8-tracks and go through and see what was available. I'm dating myself totally here, but that experience, listening to some of the albums and looking at the artwork on the covers and seeing some of the displays that they had in the store, that was a thing. And Rolling Stone records, too. I used to go to Rolling Stone Records in Norwich as well. Let me see here. Aretha's Gold, recorded partly, purchased from the wonderful Sears store for $2.97. That's cool. That's from 804. 224 Zeppelin, 4 from Musicland at Woodfield when I was 12, 1982. I love that. That store just recently closed. It changed to like a FYE or something, but I think it just, oh no, it's still open. It's still downstairs. Okay. 309, the Cars debut LP in 1978. The music still holds up. Agree with you. That's from 309. 779, Toys in the Attic, Aerosmith, first cassette. Albums were Beatles, As Many as I Could Afford. Yeah, see, that was a thing. Albums, I think back then for me in the 80s, they were like $8 or $9, and you had to save up for those. I had to work 3 hours to earn that album, you know, getting minimum wage at $3.35 an hour, which is, I believe, what we're getting paid here tonight.
Yeah, right, exactly.
312, Kathy says, Abbey Road by the Beatles. 708, Pink Floyd, The Wall. Another 708, Appetite for Destruction by Guns N' Roses. That's Dan. 262, Moving Pictures by Rush. Okay, all right. Who's Next from The Who from 847. 10 by Pearl Jam. 219, got some younger folks listening to that. I'll share mine in a minute here. Got Elizabeth from Riverside. You're on WGN. What's going on?
Curtis said who?
Oh, get out of here. He did not.
Yes, he did.
share what your first album was.
My first album was back in the 50s. It was 4 78s. They didn't have LPs at all at that time. And it was like a box. And it had Perry Como's picture on it.
Sure.
Did you know Perry? Know who Perry Como is?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Oh, my gosh, yeah. First of all, I know him a lot from a lot of his holiday music, but my mother was a massive fan of Perry Como, and every time he would do a special on the air, we would have to sit down and watch this thing. So, no, I totally know who Perry Como is.
She had excellent taste.
Elizabeth, thanks for the call. Appreciate
you
calling
in.
Absolutely.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. Jim, you're on 720 WGN. What's going on, pal?
Yeah, hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, Jim. What was your first album?
The Electrifying Eddie Harris jazz album.
That's awesome. When was that? What was that?
1968, and the song that was fabulous on there was Listen Here.
Very cool. Do you still have it?
Yes, I do. I still have it. It is in really good shape, too.
Very cool. Jim, thanks for the call. I appreciate it, pal. Mine was a vinyl record. I'll actually share that with you after the break. It was my first album. But, yeah, it was You Can Tune a Piano, But You Can't Tune a Fish. It was REO Speedwagon. I bought it. It was in 1979, and I got it. I think I was with my grandfather, and we were at the Marshall Fields on State Street because they had a record department, mm-hmm. and they had a massive record department. And that's not where I would typically go. I still went to my music lab, but I think he came up to me and said, hey, we're going to Fields. If you want to buy something, you know, hey, it's on me, whatever, $5 is the limit or whatever he said to me. And that's what I did. I bought my first album. One of the greatest debates in the music world, among listeners and even between record companies, revolves around the controversial topic of who the best-selling artist is of all time. Not album, but best-selling artist ever based on all their albums combined. Because the data can vary, right? I mean, you could say, is it just in America? Does it include best ofs? Is it international? Is that what the totals come from? Is it a best-selling artist as a solo artist and in a group, and you combine those together? So there's a lot of lists out there. I found a top 25 list that's most consistent, I think, across the board. And I got a top 25. 25 was Rod Stewart, 76 million albums. 24, Britney Spears. Phil Collins at 23 at 85 million albums. Metallica was number 22 at 90 million. Aerosmith, 90 million also, plus longest living bands in history, 50 years this year. biggest selling rock band, American rock band, in history. A claim that I think the Eagles could challenge as far as album selling is concerned. But the Eagles always comes out on top of this, too. Number 20, Barbra Streisand at $97 million. 19, Bruce Springsteen at $100 million. And you got to imagine, he's not only won Grammys, but, you know, Golden Globe Awards, an Academy Award, Songwriters Hall of Fame, you know, Billy Joel. Rolling Stones at 100 plus million. Number 16 was U2. 15, Queen. 14, AC/DC, 110 million. Whitney Houston was number 13. Eminem, number 12. Pink Floyd, 115 million albums for Pink Floyd at number 11. Celine Dion, Mariah Carey. Eagles at number 8. Led Zeppelin, number 7. Garth Brooks, Elton John. Number 4, Madonna, 166 million. Michael Jackson, 175. Elvis, 210. And who do you think's on top? This is an easy one.
Obviously the Beatles.
Yeah, it's the Beatles. Over almost 270 million albums sold, which is pretty darn cool. Oh man, the texts are flying in here. Tapestry, that was $5. The Letterman and Frankie Valli and the Four Seasons, I'm old. Thanks for sharing that, 708. Stevie Wonder, Songs in the Key of Life, still have it. That's cool. Tapestry by Carole King. Styx, Cornerstone, I had that album as well. Let's see here. Can't remember if I bought Meet the Beatles or Meet the Supremes first, but I own both. That's cool. 630-727. Tapestry as well. 630, Todd Rundgren, Something Anything. I Saw the Light, Baby. That's from Michelle. Thanks, Michelle. 704, Steely Dan, I can't Buy a Thrill. Record Club of America, mail order. There was record clubs. That was a big deal. I remember Dick Clark did a lot of commercials for these record clubs as well. Let's see here. My dad surprises, 331, in 1964 with two albums, Meet the Beatles and the Swinging Blue Jeans, Hippie Happy Shake. We were thrilled. I was 8 and my brother was 11. 414, Knuckles O'Toole, Billy Roland, plays Honky Tonk. Was Perry Como's musical director for 20 years. Unique Sound was from the Thumbtacks on Piano Hammers. Steppenwolf album was, let's see here, our friends at 773. None of my friends wanted to listen to it because I'm 18 was so popular. 630, Duane Eddy, Have Twangy Guitar Will Travel, 1960. Still have the album. 630, Supremes, Where Did Our Life Go? The Monkees was another one coming in from 773, 1965. That was a big album my sister and I had, was The Greatest Hits. Because I was born in 67, so I didn't discover them till the 70s. But that one was a big one as well. 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the best-selling albums in history, but please share your first album with us. 312-981-7200. We'll be right back.
Time for me to fly.
That's right. It's time for me to fly. That was my from the first album I bought, an REO Speedwagon. It's Dave Plyer here on 720 WGN. We're talking about first albums ever bought. 312-981-7200. Before we get to that, I have to tell you, you just heard a Rock on TV exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. It's downtown Chicago, 360 North State Street. It is a really great walk through time, rock and roll on television. Beatles on Sullivan, Dick Clark, the Jackson 5, Sonny and Cher, the Midnight Special, all the way to MTV, Britney Spears, Lady Gaga. It's a great exhibit. If you haven't seen it yet, go to museum.tv, get some tickets. It's pretty cool. Let's see here. Greg, you're on 720 WGN. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, good evening. How are you tonight?
Good evening. Great. Thanks for hanging out with us. What was the first album, man?
Yeah, sure. It actually started in 72 or 73. My sister took me to a Flipside. I don't know if you remember.
Oh, I totally remember Flipside. I see the logo in my head right now. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right. Like the alley and Flipside. Yeah. And I was born in 63, and I stumbled across this album that kind of intrigued me by David Bowie called this Ziggy Stardust and the Spiders from Mars, and I thought, well, this is kind of an interesting title. Didn't really know what to expect, but man, it's become like one of my all-time favorite records I've ever. Became a lifelong fan, and actually, what I really like about Bowie, he's so creative, even with the last album he recorded right before he died, called Black Star, so...
Yeah, that's a cool one. You know, there's a lot of people that buy a first album, and it's so outdated now to think about it. But, you know, what I'm hearing from a lot of our listeners tonight is these are some cool, longtime classic albums, and might be the era that you grew up, that there was just such great music out there.
Yeah, I know. It's kind of cool to be back in Vogue, right?
Right, exactly, exactly. Greg, thanks for the call, pal. I appreciate that. Let's see here. A couple more texts. 708 Pet Sounds. Of course, Beach Boys, 847-1963, the Beatles, the Supremes, were 8 years old, saved up my allowance, 25 cents a week, then bought Meet the Beatles. Ted Nugent, Cat Scratch Fever, was from 708, 630. My first album was Green Day Dookie. I was 12. Constance, let's see here from... first album I bought was Dave Clark 5, Glad All Over, 1964. I was 11 years old. Thanks for listening. 608, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, Elton John, amazing. 773, Meet the Beatles, 1964, Larry from Plainfield. Thanks, Larry. 630, first album for me was Captain Fantastic by Elton John, and that was Andy. 773, Alice Cooper, I'm 18 album. Another good one. I remember actually working in the record stores, and the album at the time that Alice Cooper put out was called Trash, and he was doing promotions around the city, Curtis, and what he did is he showed up with three women in scantily clad bikinis.
I think I remember you telling me this story.
Yeah, and on a dump truck.
Yeah.
And, you know, he just pulled up to the front of the store like a Chicago sanitation truck and to promote the album Trash. It was all over
yellow
the
safety vest.
yellow. He came in the store and signed autographs. It was the Music Land on Forest Preserve Drive, Harlem, and right across from Harlem and Irving. Made a full stage, so you know these artists would come in all the time and put together some autographs and so forth for us. William, you're on 720 WGN. How you doing, pal?
Pretty good. Thanks for taking my call.
Absolutely. What's the first?
I was in high school, mm-hmm. around 69 to 72, and I was trying to play this old acoustic harmony guitar, and I got a copy of Hendrix in the West.
Ooh. Ooh, I bet you that's worth something these days.
Yeah, I still got it. The only thing, I don't have a turntable. I could not believe that it was possible to play so fast.
You know what, William?
What do you play is that? Johnny Be Good?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
And it's got a lot of good cuts on it. It's got Hey Joe and All Along the Watchtower. And it's still one of the best albums I ever purchased.
I think if you ever listened to it on a CD or just streaming and you heard the music, that would be one thing I'm sure would bring back memories. But turntables are pretty. I mean, there's some inexpensive turntables out there these days. $40, $50, you can get a turntable. Just listening to that album with a needle thrown on there and listening, that might really be fabulous to listen to it again, right?
Right. One thing they say is that you miss the listening experience when you use the turntables. You know, when you have to take the needle and place it where you want and listen to the sound that it makes as it go around, and you get that little lint underneath the needle that you got to pick it up and flick it off.
I forgot about the lint, yeah. yeah, absolutely.
It's still one of my best albums. I mean, I have it on CD also, but I'd like to listen to it on a turntable just once again.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very cool. Thanks for the call, William. He's from Rockford. Thanks again for joining us tonight. What is the top, I mentioned this earlier, what is the top-selling album of all time? It is Eagles, their greatest hits, 71 to 75. And, you know, again, there's 17 million different lists. These, I try to pick the ones that are most common that looks like they're getting their information from sales, like, you know, from the RIAA or from the music industry on some sort or Billboard magazine. But the first one was Eagles, their greatest hits, 38 million copies. The second was Michael Jackson's Thriller, 33 million of those. So that's one, two. And here's the Eagles again. Number three, Hotel California at 26 million. Number four, and this is, we're talking about single albums ever sold. 24 million on that one. Number five, Billy Joel, Greatest Hits, Volume 1 and 2. That's the black and white album of him sitting in the piano. Number 23, Led Zeppelin was number 6. 7, Pink Floyd, The Wall at 23 million. AC/DC, and you're thinking about this too, like, this does incorporate just not physical albums. You know, we're talking about, you know, streaming and everything else. I mean, these classics from the 60s, 70s, 80s still rank high. AC/DC was number 8. Garth Brooks, Double Live, 21 million sold. It was a 2-CD set, number 9. This one surprised me a little bit. This is a 90s one. Hootie and the Blowfish.
What?
Cracked Rear View, 21 million copies sold. Huh. Only Want to Be With You, I think, was on that album.
Okay.
From the mid-90s, 94, 95. Fleetwood Mac, Rumors, number 11, 20 million sold. Number 12, Shania Twain, Come On Over, 20 million of those. 13, Guns N' Roses, Appetite for Destruction. See if you guys have any of these in your collection. 18 million of those. Whitney Houston, The Bodyguard. That was her best-selling album.
Yeah.
18 million. Boston. Oh, I love Boston. 17 million, number 15. 16, Elton John's Greatest Hits, 17 million of those. Garth Brooks, No Fences, so he makes it on here twice with 17 million. The Beatles, 67 to 70, that was the blue cover album, 17 million. Alanis Morissette, Jagged Little Pill, number 19. And number 20, Led Zeppelin, Physical Graffiti. Metallica was on this list. Bob Marley, Legend, Bruce Springsteen, Born in the USA. That one was 15 million at number 24. Journey's Greatest Hits, Pink Floyd, Dark Side of the Moon, Santana, The Beatles, 62 to 66, which was the red cover of their collection. Adele, so there we go. A little bit more of a recent entry. Number 29, 14 million. That was her album 21. Backstreet Boys. I know, Curtis, that was one of your favorites.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
That was her album, 14 million. Britney Spears, Baby One More Time. That was her first album. Number 14, Garth Brooks again. So Garth Brooks is in the top 35 three times of that. Meatloaf, Bad Out of Hell.
Yeah, I could kind of see that.
Played that at my wedding. No,
did
we
you
didn't.
Really?
No, we didn't. 14 million. Simon and Garfunkel and the Steve Miller Band. That rounds off top selling albums of all time. Got a couple more texts coming in. 920 Wishbone. Ash, Argus was my first album. First album I received was the Muppet Show album in 1977. That's cool. Now I want to go find that and see that was on there. I'm assuming the theme was on there. The first album I bought. That's a good point. The one that was first received, they probably thought, oh, they'll love the Muppet Show. He watches it. She watches it all the time. First album I bought was in 1986, and it was The Smiths, The Queen Is Dead. 815, retired firefighter Eddie and Juliet, Eye of the Tiger from Chicago's very own Survivor. Stood in line at Rolling Stone Records in Norwich to buy it. Love that. 773. Don't remember if it was my first album bought around 1955 or 56. Was born in 1940. It's my dad's year as well. But I had Spike Jonze, Dinner Music for People Who Aren't Very Hungry. That's awesome. Love that. That's Jerry and Jeff Park. Thanks for calling in on that one as well. So we're talking about all these classic albums. And the Grammys are on Sunday. And I'm gonna bump in, music coming in, to the next couple conversations we're going to have with Anthony DeCurtis from Rolling Stone magazine. And we're going to bump in with the two that are kind of being for the best new artist. That's Billie Eilish. We'll start with her coming up after the break, just so you can listen to some of this music. Daughter loves him and that loves her. And then Lizzo. We will also play a little Lizzo coming up after midnight.